Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org. Well, thanks to the new year, I get to talk about my very favorite Zen poet of all time, Zen Master Ikkyu. I'll tell you a little bit about Ikkyu. He lived in the 1400s in Japan. So Buddhism had been in Japan for a long time. Zen had been there for a couple hundred years, maybe 250. And but this was a really tumultuous time in Japan. The emperor had lost pretty much all of his power. The daimyos and the shoguns were fighting each other. There were wars. And Ikkyu's life itself was tempestuous from the beginning. His father was the emperor of Japan. And his mother was one of the emperor's consorts in the court. Turns out she was an outsider. She came from the south, sort of given to the court to make peace. And once she got pregnant, she lost favor and was sent off to a humble part of Kyoto. And that's where Ikkyu was born and raised till he was five. And then he was sent to a monastery. I guess that was done in some days, in those days, sometimes when he was five. So that's where he grew up. And not only did he learn Zazen, but he got a good education, classical Chinese and calligraphy and some other Zen arts. Poetry, for sure. Then at 17, he up and left. He was disgusted with monastery life. He felt that it was... the monks were holy snobs, and that... and he was tired of the politics. Even in a monastery where, you know, where you were born, what your family was like, sort of influenced how well you did in the monastery. I think Dogen left for the same reason, that hit the Tendai place that he was in. So he went out, traveled around Kyoto and found his first teacher, Kenno. Kenno was very kindly. He was known as a modest and compassionate teacher, and he was known for his concern for his disciples. Ikkyu lived with him for 4 years, and then when Ikkyu was 21, he died. And this sent Ikkyu into a tailspin. He went into a real deep depression. And then went traveling looking for another teacher. And all the teachers seemed phony to him. You know, they just nitpicked the form. They didn't care about the heart of Zen, according to him. And they were just interested in showy garb. But then he found his second teacher, Kaso, who was much harsher than Kenno, but also caring. And, when he first knocked on the door there, Kaso opened the door and threw cold water at him, doused him with cold water. So that was his introduction to Kaso. But he learned to love him. And when Ikkyu was 25, he had a breakthrough. He was out on the big lake in Kyoto, Lake Biwa, and he heard the caw of a crow. And he had a breakthrough, his great enlightenment. Later he wrote a poem about it. Here it is. This tells you a little bit about him, I think. 10 dumb years I wanted things to be different. Furious, proud, I still feel it. One summer midnight in my little boat on Lake Biwa, Koi. Father, when I was a boy, you left us. Now I forgive you. Ikkyu went back to Kaso and reported his experience to him. And his teacher said, this is the enlightenment of a mere arhat. An arhat is a, you know, lowly. In the Zen school, it's kind of we're not very nice to arhats. He says, this is the enlightenment of a mere arhat. You're no master yet. And Ikkyu says, well, then I'm happy to be an arhat. I don't really like masters. To which Kaso replied, ah, okay, now you're really a master. And Ikkyu was like that. He was always unpretentious. He was happy to be just who he was. And he just was not interested in fancy titles or finery. Another story, I've told this story before. But he was invited to, later in life, Ikkyu got to be really well known, in particular for his arts, his artistic sense. And so, you know, he had patrons in high places. And he was invited to a banquet by wealthy patrons. And he came just as he was dressed in his beggar's robes, and the staff chased him away. And so he went home and got on his good robes and went to the party. And they welcomed him happily, showed him to his place. And Ikkyu takes off his robe, undresses, folds it up, puts it at his seat, and says, it seems that you invited this robe to the party, so I'll leave it here for you. And then he leaves. Gives you another idea of what he was like. Ikkyu stayed with Kaso until he was 35 years old, and then Kaso died and he sank again into a depression. And those started his wandering years. He wandered from place to place. He frequented bars and brothels and writes about that as well. But he hung out a lot in this port city of Sakai, which was a kind of mixing place for a lot of cultures, a lot of things going on there. And Ikkyu, in these years, wrote some really amazing poems. And he shows himself to be interesting and insightful and tender. I'll read you just a few. Flowers are silent. Silence is silent. The mind is a silent flower. The silent flower of the world opens. Poetry is ridiculous. Write it, feel proud, strut, look in the mirror, believe you know. I like my anger, my grouchy, furious love. Amazing how we say such nice things about the dead. Finally, self, other, right, wrong, wasting your life arguing. You're happy. Really, you are happy. That brings us to New Year's. So, Ikkyu's in this port city, and he happened to be born on New Year's Day. So that was his birthday. It was kind of special to him. And you know, he was a little demonstrative, so he pulled pranks on New Year's Day. One year he had this red sword and a scabbard, and everybody was like, "Oh, a monk with a sword, this is terrible." It was a disgrace. And then he'd pull out the sword a little bit, and it was just a wooden sword. So it was, and then he would tell everybody, you know, it's just like, this is just a fake, like so many other Zen teachers these days. That was his message that year. And another New Year's, famously, he put a skull, a human skull, on a pike and went around town, and he'd knock on the door of a place, and when the person would open the door, he'd shove the human skull in the face of the whoever opened the door. And he'd say, "Congratulations," which was the whatever the New Year's, I have it here as omi detto.
Omi detto.
Yeah, that's the...
There's a significance to the skull because you can read omi detto as eyes coming out of your head.
I read that, that's a homonym for it. So it's, it means Happy New Year, congratulations, and also this sort of eyes popping out of the head as well. So... And now, even to this day, I think there's a custom of locking your doors for 3 days on New Year's, which they say is because of Ikkyu. Because they don't dare open the door. And even in the monastery, I mean, there is this three-day thing, because we had 3 days of cleaning right around New Year's, where everything was closed, and we just cleaned everything. Didn't answer the door. But... So, yeah, what did he mean by that? Was that just for fun? Was that just a prank? A lot of Ikkyu's poems deal with death, talk about death, often in a kind of light-hearted way. And I think that Ikkyu and this practice brings death into life. And recognizes, celebrates the benefit of doing that. Here's a poem from Ikkyu. I woke from a dream of death. Today is amazing. Death grass, death rice, death chairs, death, asleep or awake. It gives you an idea of his relationship to death. Buddhism is so wrapped up with death. It really is. You know, it was a funeral procession which led the Buddha to out onto the path. When he asks his charioteer, "Is that going to happen to me?" And his charioteer says, "Yes, sire, it will." That's what kicks him out. We in the Buddhist tradition stress that life is impermanent. And in Zen, we ask you to die every day, to make yourself impermanent, to make the self that you hold on to disappear. I remember when I was at Mount Baldy Zen Center, I heard the Pope John Paul II, I think this was before the internet, so I must have heard it from a friend, had written an encyclical that where he really criticized Buddhism as life-denying. And you can see why he would get that idea. But I think he got it wrong. Life is death. I mean, Buddhism is death-affirming, not life-denying. And it's death-affirming and life-affirming. So at New Year's, we tend to focus on this chance to start again, to start our life again, in a way, in a different direction. But don't forget, to be born anew, the best way to be born anew is to die. Die fully, all the way, And then you can really start again. And that is our practice. As fully as we can, every day, to die to ourselves and then begin again. Don't be afraid to go all the way with death. And that means letting go of the life activity, what my teacher would call the life activity. He talked a lot about the life activity and the death activity. To be able to go fully with the life activity and then be able to let that go and fully enter into the death activity, losing yourself. And we have to learn to follow both of these activities, both life and death, and understand that they are both in the world. They are both part of us. We have a life activity. We have a death activity. So, again, our practice really is dying over and over again, bringing death into life and not being afraid of dying or letting go. To really become okay with death, to be comfortable with it. And I think the more we can do that, the more we see life and death as a complementary pair of opposites, not fighting each other. Ikkyu has a poem, another poem. "You poor sad thing, thinking death is real all by itself." Death isn't all by itself. Ikkyu might as well have said, "You poor sad thing, thinking life is real all by itself." Our practice asks us to question that. And if we can learn to feel, not just think about or imagine, but to feel the dance of life and death in our lives, I think we can feel, we begin to feel other opposites as well, and begin to realize and ask us to examine this, to realize that opposites are more related than we think. There's no up without down, there's no light without dark, no self without no self. There's no happiness without sadness. And Zen asks us to not to understand this philosophically, but to understand it physically. And when we do, we're larger. We're more whole. We include both of these activities, both the life activity and the death activity, and we can do both of them. We include both happiness and sadness, and we can do both of them, winning and losing. So Ikkyu has this skull and pike. Something else I should tell you about Ikkyu is that he loves skeletons. He wrote a book of poems called Skeletons. And, yeah. I got some pictures here. Oh, yeah. Here's one. I don't know if this is Ikkyu's, but it's just a famous one of Ikkyu and the pike. See that? Yeah, you probably can't. And then this one you won't even be able to tell, make out. But it's got, this is from his poems, his book of poems, Skeletons. I actually thought I'd printed out another one as well, which was more fun. It just shows skeletons doing all kinds of things, fun things, hugging each other, cooking, playing around, and doing zazen. Yeah, there's that. And then in the poems he says, we're all skeletons under our skin. Whether we're, you know, thick or thin, plain or beautiful, rich or poor, man or woman, we all share that same skeleton. That's what skeletons mean to him. And we also all share death. We are all going to die. And more than that, we all share the death activity. Death, which sounds so scary and negative, we all share this death activity. And what's at the bottom of the death activity? Buddha nature. Hooray, a good thing. We all share that. And so if we can learn to die, we will find that. We find that we all share this quiet aspect that comes forth, that is manifest when we die in life. It's with us when we, you know, when we dance, when we drink, when we cry. Let me show you one other picture here. I'll pass this around to you. This is Ikkyu's self-portrait. I really like it. I think, I don't know what to say about it, but he looks kind of uncertain, you know? He looks kind of, something I like about it anyway. But I pass that around. Have anybody seen the movie Coco? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't. But my daughter really likes that movie, and she wanted me to watch it. This had just happened just a few days ago, right around Christmas time, and I had time to watch just half an hour before I was off doing something else. So I've seen the first half hour, and I can't believe Disney had the guts to make that movie. I mean, a movie about death. And about death in life and all these ghosts and skeletons. Ikkyu would have loved that movie. So it was so sweet for me to be watching this movie that Ava loved. She's 14 now, just turned 14. And remembering, I mean, was she 5 maybe when we were watching this nature program, and you know, it was about lions, and there's the little young wildebeest that gets separated from the herd, and I just turned it off and said, well, guess what, we've got other things to do. You know, right after she said, oh, so cute. Just thinking back to that Ava, and here she is growing up and realizing that, or having a different feeling, having a different relationship with death. That's part of growing up, realizing a different relationship with it, not being so afraid of it, bringing it into our lives. I think Ikkyu would have loved that movie. Happy New Year. And when you're making your plans for 2019, just don't forget to die. No.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.